This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. And we'll begin today with big questions in the wake of a violent and tragic stabbing spree last night in Taunton that left three people dead, including the alleged assailant. According to law enforcement authorities, 28-year-old Arthur J. DeRosa of Taunton crashed his car into a truck, entered a home, and stabbed two women, one of them fatally. He continued on to a mall, crashed into a Macy's store, and then walked into a restaurant and stabbed two more people, killing one of them, before an off-duty sheriff's deputy shot and killed him. Here's Bristol County D.A. Thomas Quinn talking today about the suspect, Arthur DeRosa.
His sister has indicated that he was acting in a disturbed manner and making irrational statements earlier on Monday, and she suggested to him that he needed to seek help.
DeRosa's family says he had been battling depression for years and had recently threatened to kill himself and was admitted into an ER Monday night but released yesterday morning. Joining us now is Orion Johnson. He's a reporter for the Boston Herald who's been following the story. And Orion, good to have you.
Thanks, Anthony. Good to be here.
Yeah, tell us, we heard there from Bristol County DA Thomas Quinn. I know the mayor of Taunton spoke. What more did we learn about what happened last night?
At the press conference,
yeah.
I think what we learned is kind of a lot of the heroics of the everyday people that encountered this man. You had the gentleman there in the restaurant who tried to intervene between the waitress and Mr. DeRosa.
This was 56-year-old George Heath, right?
He and his wife, I guess it was at the press conference, both tried to stop him from stabbing the waitress. And that's something that shouldn't be overlooked.
Right. And of course, Mr. Heath tragically lost his life. Now, Bristol County DA Thomas Quinn talked about whether the suspect, Arthur DeRosa, had a criminal record. Here's what he said.
He has not been in the criminal justice system for over 6 years. There are some matters on his record, include a number of dismissals. So that does not appear to be connected to his rampage.
So, Orion, you spoke to members of Arthur DeRosa's family. Tell you what you learned about the suspect.
So what they said is that starting recently, that he kind of had a battle with depression. He worked de-letting buildings, whether it was apartments or commercial facilities. He worked with a de-letting company, and he had recently kind of he'd been more suicidal, had more depressed thoughts. They said that his sister said that the devil was telling him that he was going to start telling lies to his children, and they took this as a sign he was not doing well. They got an ambulance for him on Monday. They said at 5 o'clock they loaded him in the ambulance and he went to the hospital ER to get a psych eval. His father visited him at the hospital. His sister talked to him while he was at the hospital, and then at 4 a.m. the next morning, Tuesday morning, he was released. Mm-hmm. And his father said he was shocked to see him in the kitchen of the house at 7 a.m. to get his keys. He was going to go work for his de-letting company, and said, you know, what are you doing here? And he goes, well, I'm just going to go to work. And his dad said he seemed fine, didn't notice any issues, and that was the last time he saw him.
And were there concerns on the part of Mr. DeRosa's family members that he was out of the hospital so soon?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that's what his sister kept saying last night, is that she doesn't understand why he was allowed to leave the hospital. She said part of his bipolar issue is that, you know, he's manic. He's up and he's down. So that, you know, he could appear to be fine, she said, but she had hoped that healthcare professionals would recognize when he was, you know, in one of these states where he appears to be fine, but really he's not fine. And the same with the father. The father said he just doesn't understand why his son, who was seeking help and trying to get into the care of professionals, why he was allowed to leave that facility.
Oh, I see. Now, the DA, of course, is still in the process of investigating this, following up on a lot of the information that you and I are talking about here. But what's still ahead in this case? I mean, what's next? What are some of the big questions that need to be answered here?
Well, sure. I think we're going to have to find out a lot more about DeRosa's medical history and a lot more about what happened kind of between the time that he went to the hospital and the time that this whole thing started. You know, there was talk, I think the DA said that he had got a phone call while he was at the soccer field. We don't know if that had anything to do with it at all, But, you know, certainly there's, I think, hopefully the investigators and others are going to be poring over the minutes between the time that he was admitted to the hospital and the time that this whole thing started.
All right. Well, that's Orion Johnson. He's a reporter for the Boston Herald. Orion, thanks so much for joining us today. We're very grateful for your effort to bring us up to date here. Now, among the troubling questions raised by Arthur DeRosa's father, as we just heard, was this: why did doctors release him? For some insight into how doctors typically handle potentially dangerous patients with mental illness, we're joined by Marcia Fowler. She's the former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Mental Health and now the CEO of Bournewood, a Brookline-based psychiatric hospital. And Marcia, it's good to have you. Thank you for joining us, Marcia Fowler.
Well, thanks for inviting me in. First of all, just let me say that my heart goes out to the individuals and families affected with this horribly tragic event, and also for the larger trauma experienced by the community at large.
Yeah, indeed. A terrible trauma, and we all feel the way you do in terms of sending our best wishes out to them. And I want to emphasize as well, before I ask you a couple of questions, that it goes without saying, of course, that in general, when we talk about mental health patients, we're not talking necessarily about people who are necessarily dangerous. This is probably a pretty unique case. But what's your immediate response to what we're learning about this story?
Well, first of all, just to, you know, follow up on what you just said, David, we know that folks who suffer from mental health conditions are much more likely to be victims of violence rather than perpetrators of violence. Typically, when someone is in psychiatric crisis, they may be brought to an emergency department or they may present themselves to an emergency department. And during that time, they're evaluated by a mental health clinician, psychiatrist or social worker. The physician or mental health clinician that's doing the evaluation needs to determine if that person is to remain or be committed to a psychiatric hospital, what is the likelihood of serious harm either to themselves or others. And that bar can be very high. Committing someone to a psychiatric hospital is a deprivation of civil liberties. Massachusetts has very strong patient rights in that regard. And if the person presents in a way that they may appear not to pose an imminent threat to themselves or others, you know, they may be free to leave. Mm-hmm. If not, the clinician will go forward with some sort of commitment.
Right. And of course, in hindsight, it seems easy to ask these questions. But what do medical professionals look for in terms of trying to assess the risk that someone might pose if he or she is released?
They'll look at, again, and Anthony, excuse me, I've called you David.
Oh, don't worry about it. I've been called much worse than David.
Right. What is the likelihood of serious harm? If it's a substantial risk to self, have there been prior attempts at suicide? Did the person come in after an attempt? Has there been some sort of bodily injury? Are they expressing suicidality at that time, that they do feel in danger of hurting themselves? In terms of others, do they appear to be making violent statements? Have they had any kind of homicidal ideation? Are others afraid of them, afraid for their own safety? Those are the typical things that people look at when they're trying to evaluate threat to self or others.
Sure. As we just heard from the Boston Herald reporter Orion Johnson, who spoke to members of Mr. DeRosa's family, and they're wondering why he was released. The father apparently was quite shocked that he was released. Is that a fair question in a case like this? I mean, what might the answer to that be?
Not being able to put myself in the shoes of the clinician. Obviously, family members know their loved ones much better mm-hmm. than others do. Sometimes people are in acute crisis. It may not be a bona fide psychiatric crisis. They may have had a bad event. They may have had a traumatic or upsetting incident in their daily life that may cause them great psychological distress, cause them to be very upset. They may present to the ED and after a period of time may calm down. Sometimes people present to the emergency departments, they may be intoxicated and very agitated. Sometimes when a person, you know, becomes more lucid, what may appear like a more bona fide threat goes away. Or sometimes people simply calm down and, you know, are reassuring to the clinician, you know, whether it's true or not, that they are no longer considering taking their own life or they will be safe and not a threat to others when they leave the hospital.
Sure. I have another question about this particular case. Again, just referring back to what we heard from Orion Johnson, from what we understand, Mr. DeRosa went by himself to the hospital. His family was concerned that he needed some kind of help. In cases like this, is it recommended one way or the other whether someone who needs this kind of help be accompanied by a family member, if at all possible?
You know, I think anytime people go to the hospital in some sort of crisis, whether it's a medical crisis or a behavioral health crisis, it helps to have someone go with you to advocate on your behalf, to help share information. But again, people have a right to privacy as well. So it really is up to the individual in terms of what route they choose to take.
Yeah. You know, again, just as an indication about the complexity of these kinds of cases, I'm glancing at a paragraph in the Boston Globe's coverage of this story. And they have a statement from DeRosa's longtime girlfriend, Samantha Shaheen. She said in a statement released by her attorney that she saw no recent signs that DeRosa was emotionally disturbed. She said she was heartbroken by the loss and that none of this was foreseen at all. So I guess the suggestion there that sometimes these things happen and they're extremely difficult to predict.
Without a doubt. It's very hard to predict, in particular, violence. There's been a lot of research done on it, and they have struggled to find a causal relation to violence. I think the larger issue is that there simply is not enough mental health services available to people who need them in the community in particular. People present to mental health professionals when they're in acute crisis. And we really need to put services in place that either are preventive or that provide behavioral health screening, whether they're in yearly physicals, in child visits, so on, that really can detect people who may have underlying vulnerabilities to particular mental health conditions when under stress or other circumstances. So the default doesn't need to be an individual, getting into acute crisis and showing up at an ED.
In other words, by the time they show up in an emergency room, it might be too late or might be close to being too late.
Yes. Yes. In a number of, there's a number of bad outcomes that people can point to. And the other issue is that people, suffer for years without treatment. And it's only when they are at the most acute phase of their illness, a lot of times, that they actually end up getting the help that they need.
All right. Well, that's Marcia Fowler. She's the former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Mental Health and the current CEO at Bournewood, a Brookline-based psychiatric hospital. Marcia Fowler, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Stay with us, listeners. Coming up, we've got a lot more ahead. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.